Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're not in the Kia studios today. We are at the Atlanta Hawks' brand new, shiny, spectacular practice facility. It is right here at North Druid Hills and 85, a convenient location. And John and I and the Preacher Man and Eric Davis, we just got the tour from Garen, the head of PR for the Atlanta Hawks. And John, the word I've got is spectacular.
Yeah.
I've been to a lot of these practice facilities. I've been to the Knicks. I've been to the Blazers. I've been to the Wolves. I've been all around the NBA doing stuff for NBA TV. This is as good, if not better, than anybody in the NBA.
Yeah, if I dip off at some point mid-show, they've got a massage chair back there that I'm going to go try out. And the heated, I don't know, the heated water pod to sleep in. I may go ahead and put the curtain up and take a nap during the 1 o'clock hour and let you just handle it yourself.
I got it.
No, this place is unbelievable. They have a giant, and of course it's all centered around the basketball court because that's where everything that happens here for the Atlanta Hawks. But you're talking about a giant court. Rick was going to shoot a pull-up 15-footer, and Garen told him, look, coaches don't like that shot anymore.
No, they don't. They
it's
don't.
Either it's three or layup. One
they don't
or the
like
other.
The long two, John, but that's all I got. I got a little mid-range game. John, of course, likes to jack it from 24, 25,
oh, yeah.
30. He crosses the timeline. He feels like he's in range. We got to give a shout-out to their equipment manager, Zach, who moments ago dimed us with some shirts.
Oh, yeah. Nice dry fit. Nice dry fit. I'll actually work out in that tonight. A little nine-round fitness action. I got back yesterday. I hadn't worked out in 2 weeks because of travel to Seattle, Thanksgiving, sheer laziness. So I worked out and had football last night. I hadn't played a football game in about 3 weeks. When I say I hurt from neck down, I am struggling.
So kind of like me last week with all the nail gun action and all the working on the house. My body was beat up too, dude.
The good thing, if you had me in flag fantasy football last night, I had a touchdown and a two-point reception. So
really?
I would have scored some points for you.
Were you a streamer or more like a weekly starter last night?
You know, if you're going for a center slash tight end, I'm a weekly start. I get a especially in a PPR league, I get a lot of catches.
It.
My yak is horrible, but I will definitely catch the heck out of the ball. I'm going to get 5 catches for 11 yards. That's about where you're getting with me.
So you're the human pillow, Jason.
Yeah, I'm Jason Witten. That's exactly who I am.
I love it. So, well, we're going to get to all of our regular stuff here, but I want to start on this. Hughes World every Tuesday is dedicated to John's victory song.
Yep.
And we heard the song, and then I was waiting because John didn't like his song yesterday, and so I wanted to hear Hugh and Wendy and Bo and all those guys. Well, John Fricke said he liked the writing. Wendy said, your mom said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Daryl took the high road, said he was working on himself, said he was doing personal work. I didn't even know what that means. And then Hugh Douglas came on, dapping you and kind of crushing you at the same time. And then it came to Bo,
of course,
a.k.a. Simon Cowell. He was not kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. Bo has to make up for his lack of hype with a little bit of anger. So he directs it at me because I'm not on his show. Because the guys on his show will typically just check him. So, you know what? Bo wants.
Is Bo jealous, John,
yes,
that you have the cojones to sing and dance and rap here on the home of the Hawks?
Well, it's not just that. He's a little jealous that he doesn't have the skill or the musical inclination. A guy that has a Leonard Skinner tattoo on his back.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah. He's got a Leonard Skinner album cover on his back. Not that I could say anything about questionable tattoos, because Lord knows I have a bunch of them. But, you know, Bo gets a little jealous. And he also likes to play a character. You know, sometimes you have to play a character. So Bo plays radio. He knows my music is top-notch. Although, I even admit it, I didn't like the song I did yesterday.
I don't think Bo was playing radio. I actually think he super hated your song.
Again, he's a guy that
really sounded like he super hated it.
Well, he went to a country concert 1 week, and then, you know, he'll...
Metallica.
Yeah, he'll go see Metallica. So, good for him.
Well, let's not forget he fell asleep.
He did fall asleep at the country concert at like 9:45 at night, and Daddy Owens back in studio had to pick him up, put the pacifier in his mouth, and take him home.
Yeah, because you always go to a country concert wearing a blazer.
Look, in his defense...
M-O.
In my defense, I was coming from Santa, so you can shut up. But in his defense, he had had a big evening. We had had a couple drinks, and we did walk about a half mile to get to the venue. So poor little Pookie was tired.
So those short little legs.
Yeah, I was going to say his short legs, a half a mile equals two-thirds of a mile or almost a full mile.
Well, he has to take
more steps than everybody
else.
Yeah, he
did ride on my shoulders for the last half of the way, so.
Give me a break. All right, I got to tell a quick story, man, and then we can get to this, and Preacher Man can get us to what's up. John, I'm at the exit to get off on Turner Hill. They're on I-20. And there's a homeless dude by the side of the road just kind of hoping that somebody rolls down their window and gives him some money. I'm sitting there forever. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. Charity always gives these guys $20. She does. I mean, she's just a saint that way. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this dude $5. So I rolled down the window, gave him $5, and he was real grateful. And he saw that I was wearing that Falcons hoodie yesterday, and he goes, the Falcons, who won the game yesterday? And I'm like, wow. Like, doesn't that put it all into perspective? Like, I'm worried about watching it live or DVR and going back and taking notes. This dude, John, didn't even know who won the game.
Really?
So I'm just saying, like, God bless that man. God bless everybody who's homeless and in need here in Atlanta. It just puts into perspective how lucky and blessed we are.
Yeah, we are, and we're lucky and blessed to be here today. Emory facility here, the Atlanta Hawks new I'm trying to think what's the correct sports complex is probably the best way to say it, and this place is unbelievable. Preacher Man's got him a fresh new shirt. He's got his Under Armour from head to toe because it's a sponsorship. Do you get paid for that, or is it just an apparel deal?
It's an apparel deal.
Okay.
Because that's what's up.
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
We do have regard for how they're moving the ball offensively. Use tight ends, use the backs, use the receivers. There's a good complement of people, much like we have. You know, how do you feature the guys in their own roles? So a lot of the spots in this game where they're strong, we're strong.
That's Dan Quinn getting us started here. That's what's up with him, talking about the Minnesota Vikings, and they're strong everywhere. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, ballers. Latavius Murray, Jerick McKinnon, above adequate when it comes to running the football, especially Latavius Murray looks healthy now for the first time all year. Kyle Rudolph, monster at tight end, makes a lot of big catches, can run block as well. And then Case Keenum, he's been a revelation this year. You know, when does the glass slipper no longer fit for Case Keenum? Because you got a feeling that day will come before the season runs out. But he has played some magnificent football. The Vikings will be point blank the best team save the Patriots that the Falcons have played this entire year.
I got to be honest, John, in terms of Case Keenum, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop because following his career, he gets in hot streaks and then he completely stinks and then loses the job. Typical backup quarterback stuff. But you watch the Vikings this year and I'm not watching a backup quarterback, dude. I'm watching like Kirk Cousins, right? Did you think Kirk Cousins was going to be a franchise level QB coming out of Michigan State?
I thought he'd be a starter, not franchise level.
Exactly. So to me, what Kirk Cousins has done in terms of surprising and putting together a nice log of work right now, Keenum's just getting started on that. And I'm not saying Keenum is going to be a $20 million per year quarterback, but he's playing like it right now. And John, he's doing read option stuff. He's doing like the shimmy right in the pocket, the shimmy left in the pocket, the step up in the pocket to make that throw. And I'm telling you right now, he is locked in on Adam Thielen. Diggs is the number two.
Yeah.
Thielen is the number one. Thielen already has 1,000 rushing yards.
Or receiving yards.
Or, my bad, receiving yards. 1,000. He already has a grand.
Here's the thing, though. Diggs is the guy you got to be careful of because what happens? He goes 5 for 170 with a couple of 60-yard plays. But Thielen's the guy that's the in and out, catching ball. But Thielen's also sneaky fast. You look at him and you think, okay, string bean white guy, probably can't run. That's not the truth. Adam Thielen is a baller. And the Falcons, hopefully you have your guys healthy, and there hadn't been a whole lot of update on who's going to be in or out, obviously, yet this early in the week. You need your defensive backs healthy. I will say this, so Dan Quinn said yesterday, I don't believe they're going to sign anybody this week. So they're going to go with the guys they have. That leads you to believe that Brian Poole's going to be healthy and ready to go. Hopefully Desmond Trufant can get through the protocol, or it might mean Bleedy Ray Wilson is now active on Sunday.
They're going to need those guys to be healthy, man, because Minnesota has just a terrific passing game right now. But they're going to be here at the Benz, and hopefully we can make life rough on them. Elsewhere, and what's up on the Midday Show with Rick and John as we come to you live from Emory Sports Medicine Center, the practice facility of the Hawks. Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. And, John, it was a stinker last night. The Ravens won it 24-17, and the Texans actually got the rock, driving for the game-tying score. And wouldn't you know, Tom Savage right down the middle, underthrew his intended receiver by about 10 yards. Mm-hmm. Easy pick for Baltimore. Game over. And right after that interception, Bill O'Brien was hot. Like, dropped his shoulders. I think he might have thrown his laminate on the field. totally upset. And I'm thinking to myself, there you go, Butchin O'Brien. That is the guy that you started over to Deshaun Watson to begin the season. Mm-hmm. So have fun with your QB, Tom Savage.
Yeah, whose throw was worse, his underthrow or John O'Korn's horrendous overthrow in the game against Ohio State when they were down 4 with about 2 minutes to play?
I will always give an overthrow worse credit than an underthrow, because an underthrow, at least you're trying to put a little touch on it. An overthrow, it's just like, dude, where are you going with it?
Yeah, I have no idea what was going on there. But, yeah, it was a horrible Monday night football game. Be honest, I gave it a cursory glance. I was back and forth because it's football, but that was not a good game. The Ravens are the worst over 500 team in the league.
And, by the way, they are above the playoff line in the AFC right now. They are the sixth seed in the AFC playoffs
right now. How bad is the AFC? I mean, does anybody believe anybody other than Pittsburgh and New England will be in the AFC championship game?
Nope, that's it.
Kansas City has fallen off. Yep. Jacksonville, no offense, Paul, your Titans. They're going to make the playoffs. They may win a game over a wild card team. Nobody's beaten Pittsburgh or New England. That's going to be your final two.
Blake Bortles is going to keep Jacksonville from doing anything in the playoffs. Their defense is ready to go. It's elite. It's top level. But Blake Bortles is not the guy you want in a playoff game. John, elsewhere in What's Up, the NFL has suspended Crabtree and Tlaib each 2 games for their epic fight on Sunday. They're in Oakland. I totally disagree with this. This is a mega overreaction. Maybe a game, but not 2 games. And you've got to look at it relatively to A.J. Green and Jalen Ramsey.
Sure.
They don't get housed a game. These guys get 2? Give me a break.
The problem is they fought, separated, fought again, separated, throwing punches. It was ugly.
Give him one game.
I would have suspended him too, but I also would have given Ramsey, especially Green. Ramsey should have never been suspended. The only thing that happened to him is he got chokeslammed twice. Green should have been suspended a couple of games as well, because the NFL doesn't want this look.
But hold on. Mike Evans runs all the way across
the field. He should have
been
suspended 2 games.
I can't believe you think 2 games.
Absolutely.
Are you serious? No,
it's a horrible look for the NFL.
Way too strong.
Horrible.
This is football. This is not basketball.
Yeah, but it's not UFC.
But it's football, dude. We've seen fights in football over the years. In basketball, they've got all these rules set up to take fighting out of the game based on the malice at the palace. This is football. More emotional game.
What also happens? You get suspended 2 games to what? To appeal it down to 1. That's why the NFL does this.
I hope they do.
That's why the NFL does this. Hey, let's talk coaching carousel
in
college football. Well, Tennessee, I still don't know who's going to be their coach. It ain't going to be Greg Schiano, and it ain't going to be David Cutcliffe. Cut said, nah, I'll stay at Duke and finish my career instead of going to that dumpster fire.
I told you his old butt wasn't going anywhere. Cutcliffe's going to stay with the Duke.
T. Martin. That's hire him now.
Uh-huh.
Offensive coordinator at USC, go ahead and hire him. He's got ties.
He won the championship the year after Manning, right?
He did.
All right, I'm okay with that hire. This is the biggest non-story ever. Jason Witten of the Cowboys has said he will not leave the Cowboys to coach UT.
I got an announcement I got to make, Rick. I am not leaving 92.9 the game to be Tennessee's head coach. 92.9 the game's better.
Thank God. We can keep the momentum going then.
We win more.
And one more development. The chancellor of the University of Tennessee did not sign the memorandum with Greg Schiano. It was signed by the AD. It was signed by Schiano, but not by the chancellor. So maybe they won't be on the hook for all that cash.
Probably not. We'll take a break. We'll come back. He is supposed to be live here with us. It's Coach Bud, live from the Hawks News Sports Complex right here off North Druid Hills on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9 The Game.
Your Atlanta Hawks on Rick and John.
All right, we are live from Emory Sports Medicine Center here at 85 and North Druid Hills. We've got Coach Bud with Rick and John here on the home of the Hawks, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And, Coach, this facility is unbelievable. I've been to a lot of these facilities around the NBA with NBA TV. This is right there at the top, if not the best I have seen. You gotta be grateful for all this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think I've been to everyone, but pretty darn near everyone. And, you know, we do feel like this is, you know, one of the best, if not the best in the league. It's just, you know, every day you come in here and you're just blown away. And, you know, no doubt we have, you know, first-class facilities, and our players feel it, appreciate it. And the coaching staff, you know, hopefully this can just continue to, you know, prop up our player development, everything we're doing for our players that we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years.
What would you say is the highlight of this facility? Which one stands out the most to you?
Yeah, there's so many. It's hard. You know, for me, it's always the courts. You know, to have 2 courts and to have the amount of space we have on the courts, you know, 6 baskets with NBA 3-point lines that, you know, at no point do they ever intersect. And so, you know, you can have, you know, shooting competitions or players working on, you know, shots to include their threes without, you know, kind of running into each other. And, you know, people I don't think appreciate how deep the three ball is in the NBA. And to have, you know, six courts with that, that don't touch or intersect, it's that's a pretty big statement. You know, the free throw lines on the side courts don't, you know, don't come onto the main court. So when you're playing pickup ball in the summer or doing things, you can be shooting free throws. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's about the courts, about the bass, but then everything surrounding it, you know, is amazing too. So
now I was giving Rick crap. I've been a known jacker. I'll shoot from wherever. Rick is more of like a 15-foot pull up guy. Do you appreciate
those guys are
that
dead.
Shot?
They're like dinosaurs, right?
I know.
Analytics, man.
I know.
I told him
I'm a long two guy. That's all I got. I can't go to 24 and make a shot.
Nobody's picking you in their YMCA league.
and it's not even like I've got a DeMar DeRozan slasher mid-range game and I can get to the free throw line. I'm just bricking elbow jump shots.
Very inefficient. Daryl Morey would not have you.
No.
That's the least most popular shot in basketball, that long two. Laughing with Coach Bud here at the Hawks' brand-new practice facility. It's amazing. And so we got a great tour from Garen and showed us that you and Travis are right next to each other and can view the court. Talk about the advantage of that. And is that different from the previous setup that you had?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, having the connectivity between really everybody, but, you know, the front office and, you know, the coaching staff is huge. And the ability to just kind of, you know, basically walk about 10 feet and you're in each other's office and share ideas and be able to see the court. You know, the front office in the Phillips Arena was, you know, on the other side of the hallway, had no, you know, vision of the court, no access to it. You felt like they were in a different part of the building. And, you know, we made the best of it. You know, I will give, you know, both the front office, the players, the coaches, you know, I think we made the best of every day at Phillips. But now to come here and see what we have and the connectivity between every group in the building is just awesome and important, you know, if you want to, you know, be the best. And that's certainly where we want to be.
I would just say just from an accessibility standpoint, not having to drive downtown every day. And I live on the north side of town, so coming here was beautiful. But for you guys, it's got to be a little bit easier to not deal with the downtown connector just getting here.
Yeah. No, it was huge as we, you know, try to, you know, this the concept of a practice facility, I think, has been, you know, talked about for a long time. And as it became more a reality when the new ownership group took over and made it a priority, one of my biggest priorities was, you know, where it's located. At the end of the day, we want it to be, you know, in a great location for the players where they can get to it early in the morning, late at night, come at any time. It is, you know, we talked about how important the courts are. You know, the location of a facility is, I think it's crucial. And I think, you know, we hit it out of the park with, you know, being located here in Executive Park and Emory being, you know, partnered with Emory. You know, players, you know, live, you know, either north, a little north, a little south, east, west. But, I mean, we feel like we're right in the center and players and coaches and staff can get here easily. And that's huge in a city like Atlanta.
And, Coach, you know, this is such a first-class organization from Tony Ressler on down. You think of Phillips Arena, the best announcer in Ryan Cameron, the best animation on the court in the league, the best DJ in the league. It's like the best. And now it's this practice facility. And you're right. It is about – so in terms of that, first-class organization, first-class this, and this, how can that aid you guys in terms of bringing some good talent down here to the Hawks?
Well, I think everybody sees it and feels it. You know, when you bring a player, you know, and I always talk it's about, you know, keeping your players too. You know, I think – you know, we have a you know, some really young good
players.
Oh, and
by the way, I forgot Sir Foster.
Yeah, Sir Foster.
The best organist in the league. Sorry, Coach, continue.
But, you know, I think whether you're wanting to retain your best players or attract new players, you know, when our current players are coming to work here every day and you bring a potential free agent through here and he sees a facility like this and sees the commitment to, you know, really the player and you know, how can we make him the best he can be in his career, maybe even extend his career. You know, it's going to turn heads. It's going to, you know, put us, you know, in a position where hopefully, you know, those types of things happen because they see it and feel it, everything that's happening the last year or two with Tony and his group. It's really impressive.
We got to talk with John Collins and Kent Bazemore a second. They were back in the locker room, and you could just see the smile on their faces. How have the players reacted to the new spot?
Yeah, no, they're over the top. You know, it's probably a contest who's happier, the coaches or the players. And you know, I think, you know, there's a real professionalism that's, you know, I think, you know, common throughout the league now. The times have changed. These guys, you know, they're very in tune with their bodies. They're very in tune with taking care of themselves and how can they, you know, put themselves in a position to perform at a high, high level. And so they see and appreciate everything that the facility provides to, you know, put them in that spot or that position. And, you know, it's just a good place to come to work, the natural light, you know, the weight room, the pools, everything. It's just, you know, we're all, you know, kind of giddy.
We're getting a download on the Hawks' new practice facility from Coach Mike Budenholzer. Later in the show at 1 o'clock, Grant Hill is going to join us. We'll get his perspective on this. We're at Emory Sports Medicine Center here on the home of the Hawks, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And John mentioned John Collins, and I've been blessed to interview him, I don't know, Coach, three or four times. I've been able to spend a little bit of time with him on the side, including in the locker room. And I asked him, you know, we got on cars, and I said, have you treated yourself yet? And he said, no. And he said he's waiting to stack checks and so that it feels better. And then around Christmas time, he may treat himself with a nice ride. Well, what do you think about the sensibility of this young man from Wake Forest?
Yeah, no, he's been off the charts in all areas, you know, from off the court to on the court, the human. I think that's what we're as excited about as anything. And, you know, I see him. I don't know exactly what he's driving, but I would say he's, you know, in a pretty conservative lane right now and smart and thinking about it. And if he stacks some checks or whatever they call it by Christmas time and wants to treat himself, I think he's wise. He waited a lot longer than a lot of other rookies to you know, treat himself. So he's been great to work with, and just, you know, I think he's got his head on his shoulder and knows where he wants to go. And, you know, he's just, I think, been well-raised, and, you know, hopefully we can continue to do the same.
Coach, probably the number one thing I'm watching for as the season progresses is the expansion of his game. And we've talked a lot about you like him at the five. He's comfortable there. And so just that progression to the four. I'm going to ask you about this all year, yeah. And hopefully there's, like, gradual improvement and gradual expansion. But where's he at with that right now?
Well, you know, playing he and Dwayne together, you know, starting them the last, you know, handful of games, and you know, our two bigs offensively, they're kind of interchangeable, kind of a first big and a trail big. So offensively, there's a lot of things that are similar. And, you know, defensively, you know, Dwayne's probably going to take the challenge of guarding, you know, maybe, you know, whoever the best player might be. But, you know, some nights John's maybe guarding four, some nights he may be guarding fives. So I think just playing with Dwayne more minutes is going to, you know, allow him to kind of feel and, you know, get to guard some fours and adjust to that a little bit. You know, he's shot the ball. He's made, you know, some jumpers recently and practice. You know, I think he's going to, you know, be a good shooter. I think that's going to come in time. I definitely don't want to rush it, or we don't want to rush it. I think, you know, everything's going to come in time, and I think it's a good question. I look forward to it. Every Thursday I'll be ready and prepared for it. But, you know, I think his progression is in a good place, and playing him with Dwayne some, I think, is going to give him some of that look and feel of playing some of the power forward.
Coach, you guys can do 1,000 hours of research on a guy and watch film and interview him and everything else, and then there's guys that get to the NBA and end up being knuckleheads. How's it feel when you do all of that and you get a kid like John Collins in here?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I've had several conversations, you know, over the last month or so just about the person. And, you know, you do a lot of work and do a lot of research to find out, you know, about what kind of character they have. How are they going to respond to coaching? How are they going to respond to adversity? And you can never be sure, but, you know, certainly the amount of time and work that goes into it. And then when it, you know, you haven't been, I don't know if the word is tricked or player, you know, sometimes people change, even though we say they can't. You know, he's got here and been everything that, you know, we felt we learned and researched and really more, to be honest with you. So it's, you know, there's a lot of time and effort that goes into it, and it's time well spent.
Just down the road from here on Thursday night, we're at Emory Sports Medicine Center, North Druid Hills and 85. Just down the road from here, it'll be, of course, the game on Thursday. The Cavaliers in town, 7:30 at Phillips Arena. And you already beat them this year, but now Cleveland's won, I believe it's 8 in a row. They handled Philadelphia last night. Philadelphia's been rolling. So what are you seeing differently now from – did you watch the game, first of all? And what are you seeing differently now from the Cavs than you did when you beat them earlier this year?
Yeah, no, I didn't see any of the game last night. I saw the box score and a couple of the headlines, you know, and looked like they beat them pretty good. And, both, you know, Philly's been playing well too. So, you know, and we'll try to dive into Cleveland a little more today, tomorrow. And, you know, I think we're more focused on us in this little 5-day window. But, you know, it looks and sounds like LeBron's, you know, playing out of his mind, if that's possible. And, you know, I think they're, you know, maybe got a little more cohesiveness. And, you know, they have a few injuries they're dealing with, but they've been dealing with them for a while. So maybe they've kind of figured out rotations and things like that. But, you know, we'll dive into them. We know they're good. We're pretty familiar with each other. So, but our guys are looking forward to Thursday night, no doubt.
Coach, great stuff as always. Go enjoy this facility and get ready to get us a win against Cleveland.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks Coach.
On the court with Coach Bud, brought to you by Delta here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll come back. We'll do a slice of life. Rick has a story about receipts, lost clothing, and everything else. We'll break that down next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The action in the SEC.
Brought to you by Shane Company. Your friend in the jewelry business. Blow her mind, not your budget, with an engagement ring from Shane Co. And here's the deal.
Okay.
Yesterday, I was telling you guys that Sunday morning, about 5 a.m., whenever it was, I forgot the suitcase with my boys' clothes in it to send them back to Minnesota with. So I had to go to the post office yesterday. And let's play a little game here.
Okay.
How much do you think it cost to priority mail? It's going to get there on Thursday. To priority mail a box about this big.
$60.
$60 is the call by John. Preacher man.
How big is the box again?
About 2 feet by 1 foot.
Knowing the post office, I'm going to go $69.
Okay. With insurance, $55.
Okay.
I'm not really shocked by that.
Now here's the thing. So I got insurance. It cost, I don't know, $15. So it probably was around $40 for the actual mailing and like $15 for the insurance. So I asked him about the insurance. Hey, if something happens, what do I need to do to, you know, get the claim? And she said, well, do you have the receipts for all the clothing? I said, what? No, I don't have the receipts for the clothing. She's like, well, then you're probably not going to be able to get your money back for the clothes. And I said, okay, can I get my money back on the insurance? She's like, yeah. But and then so she went on to say, why don't you keep your receipts? Like, she kind of got into me a little bit. And I'm like, why would I keep receipts for my children's clothing? Mm-hmm. Like, I keep receipts from Joseph A. Bank for suits because I can write it off. I keep receipts for, like, dinners and stuff like that. Travel, you can write all that stuff off. You can't write off clothes.
No.
So I throw those receipts away. And so she's like, you would keep the receipts for a situation like this. I'm like, this is a once-a-lifetime screw-up.
Right.
I'm not keeping a mountain of receipts for clothing, for the one time that I might forget a suitcase. And I wasn't like going in on her like this. We were just having a little Larry David odd conversation back and forth. But then, guys, I looked behind me. There was a line of
about 15
people. Now, there were two other male people, you know, two other lines basically. So I wasn't bottling the whole thing up, but I'm like, all right, I just got to go. But anyway, so $55. And I want to start this conversation here, man, with receipts. Who, like, am I nuts? Because she was looking at me like I'm nuts. And literally, like, kind of like, why don't you keep the receipts? And kind of giving me attitude like that. And I'm like, actually, I want to be nice about this, but I'm on the complete other side. Why the hell do I want a mountain of clothes receipts in my house? I'm not a hoarder after all, John.
The only time I keep receipts, I will keep receipts until somebody tries them on. Because our kids grow so fast. Something that you may have bought a month ago that fit, now all of a sudden doesn't fit. So I'll keep the receipts to be able to return from there. But that's very few and far between. Typically when I buy something, like if I'm at Marshall's or Ross, try this on, it fits, cool. Receipts in the bag with the trash and the tags and it's gone. I'll keep electronic receipts until I know that they work. And once they work, I mean, you're basically on the warranty anyway. You can't take out and put a stereo in and a month later bring it back anyway. I mean, I guess you could if you really want to fight. Most stores, though, if you bought it at the store and you're truly just wanting to return it anyway, if you bring it back in and go, I lost the receipt, they go, all we can give you is store credit. Well, that's fine. I'll take the store credit and go back and get what I want anyway, Preacher Man. How long do you keep receipts?
I keep it to the time I get home, and then I write it down, and I shred it.
What do you mean write it down?
I keep it in my checkbook. I always make sure.
Really? You balance your checkbook
still?
Absolutely. Is this 1988?
No, man.
I just get to Thursday before payday, and I look at my account and see if I'm overdrawn or what's going on.
I cannot do that. I have to know where my cash balance stands.
See, here's what
I'm
I do.
I'm just old school. That's the way I was taught, and that's the way I've always done it.
Here's what I do. I pay, like when we get paid, I pay everything that needs to be paid.
Yeah.
And then I go, all right, I have this much left. And I'll usually take cash out if I have it and go, this is all I have for the week, and try to not touch my bank card. The problem is I normally touch my bank card, and then I'm like Rick, I'm looking the day before, and I go, oh, man, I have $11. This is awesome.
It sucks when you get that email and you're under by like $550, and you're like, what the
under?
Hell?
You've overdrawn your account by 550.
Now here's the thing.
How are you 2.2 and you're over?
if Charity was listening, she'd be so mad right now. Uh-huh. But you guys know how high. Well, you don't know exactly how high my Progressive payment is. So sometimes that Progressive payment like comes out of nowhere because it's an auto withdrawal, and then you look at your bank.
It's the Jets that did it.
Oh yeah. I just got. I think I've said too much with the it's not Progressive's fault, okay? It is not Progressive's fault. It is my fault for getting into accidents and screwing up and doing all this kind of stuff. But it's a nut. So sometimes it takes me down, and I got to move some money around.
Yeah, you got to every now and then. Emo, how long do you keep?
I always pay my bills first. That's the first thing. As soon as you get paid, I mean, even if they're not due for like 3 weeks, I'll pay.
No. If they're not due for 3 weeks, I got another paycheck coming before that.
I'll go without before that.
Oh, no. I'm not going without. They'll go without.
Did I just say too much?
Probably.
Who knows? Wouldn't be the
first time.
Is she
listening or is she out on the deck? We'll find out in about 30 seconds. M.O., how long do you keep
she'll text me. Trust me. We'll find out here shortly.
Did I say too much?
Yeah, M.O., I'm in trouble, dude. What's up?
Rick calls that a Tuesday around here. My problem is that we'll go out to dinner, and I'll just take the credit card receipt and throw it in the wallet and leave it in there for 3-4 weeks. And then, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, you'll clean out your wallet. And I'll be like, the hell? How do we spend $200 at Longhorn? Well, how much did we have to eat? So it's smarter if I just throw it away as soon as I get it. I don't keep any stuff like that.
Who has a wallet that you can keep a receipt in? You see what I have right here? I have all the essentials, Paul. Two credit cards, a driver's license. Yeah, Rick's is nice and slim and small.
I got a Swallet. It's the Swallet.
Yeah, the difference is you have about $2,500 in cash in yours.
Not that much.
Preacher Man,
it's a nice little roll.
Preacher Man's a little hard. Your wallet's a little too steel for me. Yeah, but he's got that. But mine's the RFID.
Yeah, mine is too.
Yeah, you can't get anything.
We should take a picture of our wallets and put it out there. I mean, we have the, because dude, I don't understand.
Everybody has something different.
I don't understand the guy that has like the baseball sized wallet.
That's Mark Owen.
Mark alone. He's got that trifold billfold back there.
M.O., do you keep it in your back pocket?
Yes, sir. But I don't. I take it.
How do you sit on that?
I don't. It's funny you said that. I always throw it to the side. I can't drive sitting on it. I don't work and sit on it. No, I always have to take it out because they say this is serious. For dudes that have like the wallet where you have 500 credit cards, every business card you've ever had, all these receipts, it's bad for your back. It'll give you horrible back problems and jack things up. So, yeah, clean it out or just get a smaller wallet.
Because you lean to one side, is that why?
I do. I kind of have the gangster wallet.
Don't get me wrong. I have like 4 credit cards at home, but I only bring the one that I need. Like, okay, I have my bank card is always with me, and then I have a credit card for emergency or football purchases or whatever that the wife won't track. I have that one just in case.
Or in case I just need to stop over at a little drive-through window.
Yeah,
little cashish.
Hey, gotta have some cash.
A little cash for that one.
Hey, Falcon fans, are you going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the game? Join Carl Dukes and Bud Light this Sunday from 11 to 1 for the Bud Light tailgate on the porch. Join us before the game right inside by our buddy. Gate 3, it's the Giant Falcons. Skate, skate! Bud Light, famous among friends. We take a break. We come back. Let's talk some college football next. What happened in the ACC this season? We'll break down what our picks were and what actually happened next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Weekday mornings on The Game.
92.9 The Game.
Three or layup? One or the
other.
They
like the long two, John, but that's all I got. I got a little mid-range game. John, of course, likes to jack it from 24, 25, 30.
Yeah.
He crosses the timeline. He feels like he's in range. All right, we're having fun here, man, at Emory Sports Medicine Center, the home of the Hawks, practice facility-wise. And, of course, they play their games at Phillips Arena, and we are the home of the Hawks. And we've already had Coach Bud on, had a great interview with him. Go to iTunes, go to 92.9thegame.com. You will hear that. Coming up next, Rennie Curran, damn good dog. Yeah. He will join us at 11:20, and it's our college football hour here. And I'm excited about the college football cheat sheet question. Don't call yet, but we'll tell you when to call and get involved in the conversation. Who do the Dogs match up better with, Auburn or Alabama? I've been saying for a couple of days now, I think that Alabama would have been a better draw for the Dogs. I know John disagrees with that. We'll hash it out at 11:40. But right now, John, let's do the ACC season recap, and tomorrow we will recap the SEC season.
All right, first and foremost, who did you have originally in the ACC championship game when we did our predictions way back in August?
A lot of parties, John, in between now and then, so my memory is sketchy. Miami and Florida State, I believe, is what I had.
That is also what I had. I had Miami and Florida State. I had Miami winning the ACC. You had Florida State winning the ACC. So neither one of us were spot on with our predictions. I think both of us undersold Clemson. I remember what I put down as my the way that I ranked them. I had in the Coastal, I had it Miami, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, Duke, Pitt, Virginia finishing dead last. Well, the bottom portion of the conference I was off. Virginia had a much better year than anybody anticipated. North Carolina was flat out dreadful pretty much the entire year. They finished dead last. But I was pretty close. I had Duke, Pitt. So basically the only thing I got wrong in the Coastal, I should have flip-flopped Virginia and North Carolina. Over in the Atlantic, I had it Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, Louisville, Boston College, Cuse, and Wake Forest. Not really spot on with that one. Clemson obviously wins. NC State finishes second. Three-way tie for third with Louisville, Wake, and Boston College. FSU falls to 3-5 in conference, and Syracuse finished 2-6 in conference.
What I was right about, NC State. I had them high. I had them third in the Atlantic. They finished second in the Atlantic at 6-2, 8-4 overall because, obviously, Florida State bottoming out to 3-5 in conference. I had Clemson high, but, you know, below Florida State. In terms of Wake Forest and BC, I didn't really have an opinion on those teams. Didn't know enough about them yet. But I did tell you that Louisville was going to be a drag or at least a middling mediocre team. And, in fact, they are 4-4 in conference, 8-4 overall. And you and I both agreed that the Coastal of the ACC came down to a three-team race between Miami, VT, and GT. And that's exactly how it went. And then in terms of the Pitts, the UVAs, the Dukes, and the UNCs, you know, we were just kind of guessing at that point. But I did tell you that I thought Virginia had a little bit of life because of the passing game with Donnie Dowling. And they've got who's the number 14?
Zacchaeus.
I know about Zacchaeus, but number 14, the guy that caught the TD that wasn't against you guys. Lavrone?
No, Lavrone, yeah.
Is it Lavrone or Lavrone? I watched too many games with the sound down. But nevertheless, I did see a little bit of life from Virginia, and they showed that to us with a 3-5 conference record and 6-6 overall. But in terms of the top, you know, we both thought FSU was going to be either that team or a contender, and obviously that didn't work out.
Yeah, see, I picked FSU preseason to go 10-3. I figured they'd lose to Alabama, and I thought they'd lose to Miami twice. I thought they would beat Clemson, and again, I undersold Clemson. I didn't realize Kelly Bryant, and I don't know that anybody that doesn't wear the paw on their shirt or on their helmet realized that Kelly Bryant would walk in, or in Knox's case, on the back of his head, realized that Kelly Bryant would walk in and be, he's not as good as Deshaun Watson, but he's been pretty close. And we all agreed their defensive front was going to be great. They have been. We knew that some of their young running backs would be really good and their receivers would be fine with Hunter Renfrow and Deion Kane, and they have been. Nobody thought Kelly Bryant would walk in and be the quarterback that he's been, and that's part of the reason they're 11-1 with a chance to go to the college football playoffs.
And some great coaching by Dabo Swinney.
Oh, of course.
And just sort of next man up, wash, rinse, repeat. That's where this program is at. So let's get to some of these categories, John. We're going to do this for the SEC tomorrow as well, either 11 or 11-20, depending on maybe a guess that we get. But biggest win in the ACC this year for you?
I've got it narrowed down to two. It's either Clemson over Auburn, which the time that it happened didn't seem like that big of a win. It was like, all right, you beat a top 25 team. Nice win. Keep it. It was an ugly, ugly football game. 14-6. Clemson with 10 sacks. You know, Kelly Bryant gets knocked out for a little while, comes back in. But in the grand scheme, now it's a huge win for Clemson. He'll probably have them ranked number one tonight. The other one for me is Miami over Notre Dame. And, yeah, that's a homer pick. But for Miami, they had heard all year that they weren't good. They weren't good enough. Wait till you play Notre Dame. They're too good. And they steamrolled Notre Dame to show that when Miami's at their best, they're as good as any team in the country.
Those are great choices. For me, I'm staying in conference, and I thought it was Clemson and NC State.
That's a huge win.
I thought that was an unbelievable game, very entertaining, lots of big plays. 38-31 was the final, and really the difference, as we talked about, was Feaster up the middle for about 89 yards. They just caught NC State napping or whatever.
Do you feel this weekend's ACC title game has the potential to be like that?
Yes. I don't understand all these people not giving Miami any chance. I don't understand the people that think Clemson's going to run Miami. I don't get it. They haven't watched Miami this year, John, or maybe they watched the North Carolina game.
Or they watched the Pitt game.
Exactly, and that's what they're drawing their conclusion from. You got to look at the whole body of work, man. Miami, look, they were one of these walk-the-tightrope teams, live dangerously teams that they did all year virtually, with the exception of Notre Dame, with the exception of Virginia Tech. They lived dangerously. Y'all lived dangerously against Virginia. That, by the way, for me, John, entertainment-wise, with all the fantasy that I had in that game with Rozier and Homer in a semifinal game, thinking Miami was going to lose that game. You're down two touchdowns in the second half. You roar back and win that baby 44-28. I get a late TD out of Travis Homer, who had done nothing the entire game. That was actually number two in terms of entertainment value for me. And it was the day my boys got to town. We were watching that game and having a blast with that Miami-Virginia game.
All right, what's the biggest loss this year?
Miami at Pitt. I mean, it wasn't big in terms of your season is ruined. It just was, I thought, the worst loss of the year. And just in terms of, and by the way, the freshman QB Pickett, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And he played really well against you guys, and that was a different look than DiNucci. Look, Pitt doesn't beat Miami with DiNucci at quarterback. Pitt doesn't beat Miami with Max Brown with the superfluous E at quarterback. But this Pickett guy, you all didn't know who the hell he was. You weren't prepped for him, and he played really well. But in terms of just talent on the football field and how flat and lifeless your team was, John, I say the worst loss of the year was Miami at Pitt.
Worst loss for me is DeAndre Francois. It's simple and plain. Now, would Florida State have won a national title? No, they weren't. And I never bought into that in the offseason. I said that. I picked them to lose three games this year. They ended up losing six. If DeAndre Francois is there, they win a couple of more games. Maybe they beat Miami. Maybe they beat NC State. Who knows? Season's different. His injury could have changed the trajectory of that program. Because if Jimbo Fisher now leaves, part of him leaving is the fact you went 6-6 and you had people in the crowd, or 5-6. They play Louisiana Monroe this weekend. You potentially.
By the way, not a layup.
It's not, and it's also one of those games that's going to get you to a bowl game in Shreveport in December. So,
I'm just saying, it's not a layup. They're probably going to win, but ULM, they were right there with Auburn in the first half and actually covered that game against Auburn there in Jordan-Hare.
But with DeAndre Francois, it could have changed the trajectory of Florida State. And I think it's a huge one.
Would have, for sure.
Still wouldn't have been in the playoffs. They wouldn't have been in the ACC title game, in my opinion, but that program is now in a state of flux, especially depending on what happens with Jimbo Fisher in the next 5 or 6 days.
Coach of the year, Mark Richt.
Mark Richt.
We both agree on this.
I'm the only person that really thought Miami could go. And I picked them 11-1 this year. And I don't want to say I called exactly what would happen. I said they will beat Florida State. They'll win the ACC. They'll lose a game they shouldn't lose. They didn't get to play Arkansas State, or they would be an 11-1 football team right now. But Mark Richt's the coach of the year. Dabo Swinney would be second for me.
And DeDorn of NC State deserves some credit, but they didn't break through. Okay, you're 6-2 in conference. You're 8-4 overall. It's a good season.
Yeah.
I don't believe they're top 25 right now. I think they're probably just out, maybe between 20-25. But had Doran gotten another win or two, he'd be my choice here. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. They lost four games. I can't give it to
him. Bronco Mendenhall, and I know they're only 6-6, but people thought that was a crazy hire 2 years ago. He's got Virginia trending in the right direction.
He does, but not coach of the year in the conference. And it's because you had all this, well, what were they, 5-1 or something like that? And then you take bad L, and they really had a rough stretch midseason. But we both agree, Mark Richt, coach of the year.
What's the game of the year?
Game of the year. I've got Syracuse-Clemson, that Friday night joint up there. Just for the shock value and the chaos factor of it, and you've got Kelly Bryant going out, and then you're like, why are they going Zara Cooper in the second half? I thought Hunter Johnson was the guy. So that was that whole drama. I had Irvin Phillips on my fantasy team. So, you know, I really watched a lot of Syracuse football this year. By the way, John, I literally cannot believe that Syracuse lost their last five games.
Wow, Dungy going out killed them.
It finished 2-6 and 4-8.
They didn't win after beating Clemson.
Correct. Now, the thing is, Dungy did go out, and he's one of the best QBs in the conference, but Zach Mahoney, their backup, actually got kind of busy last year. I thought he'd at least be able to hold the fort, get him a win or two, but it hasn't worked out. They really hit the skids late. But game of the year for me, Syracuse-Clemson.
Yeah, and that was a fun one on a Friday. Now, that was one, and I think the World Series was being played. Yep. Or one of the championship series in baseball. I was watching baseball, and the score flashes up that Syracuse is winning. I said, go ahead and pop back over here and take a look. And the next thing you know, I forgot all about the baseball game, and I'm watching probably the upset of the year in college football with Syracuse knocking off the defending national champions. Game of the year for me is Miami FSU. Remember, the first half of that game was horrible. 3-0 at halftime. The last four possessions, each team scored to take the lead. Miami obviously winning it with 6 seconds left. And again, changing trajectory. Kids learned how to win a game that they had never won. All those seniors that had never beaten Florida State, Miami needed that. Mark Richt loses that, they probably lose two other games this year, and they're sitting at home this week watching Virginia Tech most likely go on to the ACC title game.
That's one of the games of the year in college football, not just the ACC. The rivalry of it, the getting over the hump for Miami of it, it wasn't a miracle. It's a nice catch by Langham on the back shoulder throw there by Rozier. The catch against Georgia Tech was a bit of a miracle for you guys. Mm-hmm. But I remember being at a music festival, the Project Pabst Fest in East Atlanta, watching all kinds of weird music and being able to, where were we, Argosy, watching the fourth quarter of that game. Thrilling college football, dude. And obviously I had you in mind. You're my boy. That game meant everything to John Michaels. Mm-hmm. Like, Miami loses that football game. You are still in a fetal position with your thumb in your mouth.
Exactly.
Are you happy where I put your thumb?
I thought you were going to put it somewhere else. I was going to say, no, that would have been weird. Don't want it to go there. I was going to say my thumb maybe on top of the Tito's spout as I just pour it down my throat. Yeah, that was one. I needed that.
Give me the sound effect.
Which one?
Of the thumb.
Mark Owens just put his head down somewhere.
Interpret
back in the
that as you will.
Yeah. Hey, player of the year in the ACC.
Malik Rozier.
Really?
Malik Rozier.
No way.
Who's player of the year?
Lamar Jackson.
Give me a break.
His stats are better
Who
than they
cares?
Were. His team stinks. It's
Who
not
cares?
His fault. People
Stop
care.
Stop it, John.
People care.
Stop it.
It's Lamar
He's not
Jackson.
A Heisman candidate. He's not an ACC player of the year candidate. They got L's, dude. They were 4-4 in conference.
It's not on
They got beat by
just
Boston
on
College.
Dude, it's not just on Lamar
break.
Jackson. Lamar
You're
Jackson's
so
the player
wrong.
Of the year.
They're empty stats, dude. Empty stats.
They were nine.
Empty.
You know they were 9-3 last year?
Who cares?
They're 8-4 this year. They were 9-3 last year. People care.
8-4.
It's not like they're 4-8.
You have a guy who's going to be a star in the NFL, and you're 8-4 in the ACC, losing to teams you should not lose to. They're empty stats, John. Malik Rozier had great stats, and they're not empty. He threw for 2,807 yards, so he's going to be over a 3,000-yard passer, 25 touchdown passes, 408 on the ground with 5 rushing touchdowns. 30 combined touchdowns from Malik Rozier. And, John, you know this. If Malik Rozier is Guantanamo Bay or who was the other slappy QB that Tennessee had? Dormady?
Yeah.
You remember?
Quentin Dormady.
Like,
your guy.
Like, John, one of those guys could have been good. Mm-hmm. They're highly touted guys, right?
They were.
Okay. But they both sucked. And Tennessee sucked. Your guy, Malik Rozier, could have been a bad QB. He could have been a sketchy, up and down, terrible QB. Where would Miami be right now? They'd be where Louisville is.
Probably 8-4. If Lamar Jackson's not on Louisville, they're 3-9.
Dude, I'm not saying he does make them better. He does make them slightly competitive, but they're empty statistics, dude. We're talking about Miami. How many times have they made the ACC championship
Never.
Game?
They haven't.
Okay, you're making my case for me. Rozier had great stats. He was the transcendent player on the Miami Hurricane team, and he got them to the ACC championship game.
He got there largely based on his defense.
Dude, I just 30 combined touchdowns.
That's,
I get it. The defense was killer.
Good. Lamar Jackson does that in about 6 games.
Empty stats.
They're not empty stats.
Yes, they are. How can you argue this? He has 4 losses. Malik Rozier has 1. That's a difference of 3 games, John. That's a difference of winning your division in the ACC or not. And it's not like Rozier threw for 1,800 yards with 15 touchdowns and some Michigan quarterback stat line. He had a big-time stat line.
No,
he averaged 30 points per game in your fantasy league. He started for me every week.
I like Malik Rozier. Don't get me wrong. He's a streaky quarterback. He's made a ton of big plays. He's also kept other teams in games because he is a streaky quarterback, and if he could have thrown the ball better against Pitt, they win by 4 touchdowns because they have people wide open all over the field. He just was streaky. Streaky against Virginia. Didn't play well for a half, then had a really nice second half. Very streaky, horrible against North Carolina, other than a couple of big
Why
throws.
Why are you trucking your guy
I'm
right
I'm being
now.
Honest with you.
Dude, you're nitpicking is what you're doing.
I don't think Malik Rozier was in the top 3, and the ACC did their vote yesterday for all conference. Malik Rozier was, I don't even believe he was an honorable mention quarterback.
Well, they didn't have me on the ballot. I would have had Malik Rozier up there at the top, and right there at the top. So Lamar Jackson, wow, I did not.
That would be the player of the year for me.
Give me a break. I did not see that answer from you. I thought you might go Kelly Bryant or something like that.
Kelly Bryant would probably be second for me.
But Kelly Bryant didn't have the stats that Malik Rozier did.
It's not all about stats.
But they had 1 loss for Clemson, 1 loss for Miami.
Yeah, you also have to deal with what your team is.
I know. If Lamar Jackson's team brings him down to the mud.
If Lamar Jackson's on Clemson or Miami, they're both undefeated. But
you're convoluting the conversation. We're talking about what Rozier did versus what Lamar Jackson did.
I take Lamar Jackson 100 times out of 100 over Malik Rozier.
Over what, the stats and the wins this year?
Yes, 100 times out of 100.
You can't do it. The stats say that Malik Rozier was way better.
No, they don't. The wins, he's on a better team. He's on a better team. That's
what matters more than wins, John?
It's not a team award. It's an individual award.
But the player of the year has to win games to win the award.
Not all the time.
In my world, he does.
Lamar Jackson won the Heisman last year with 3 losses. Take a break. We come back.
And they were wrong for giving them that award.
We'll talk to Rennie Curran next about Georgia and Auburn, the rematch on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
92.9 The Game. We'll take on those challenges this week, prepare our team to play, and get our guys ready to go out. And we want to be at our best when our best is needed, and it's certainly needed this week.
That's Kirby Smart. You know, the best was needed a couple of weeks ago at Jordan-Hare, and the Dogs were not up to the challenge. This, of course, will be a neutral field game, and hopefully the Dogs fare much, much better. It'll be Dogs and the Tigers at 4 o'clock on Saturday in the SEC championship game. And if I could only watch one of these great games on Saturday, that would be it. But you don't have to make that decision. You can watch all the games with your boys. Randy McMichael, John Chuckery, and John Fricke broadcasting live from 11 to 2:30 this week. Saturday for the championship Saturday edition of College Football Game Time presented by Bud Light. And this week it is going to be at McCray's Tavern. And it does not say
it's
which
the Midtown location.
Midtown location, yep, of McCray's Tavern. Presented by Bud Light, which is famous among friends. Again, it's Fricky, it is Chuckery, it is McMichael, 11 to 2:30 at the Midtown location of McCray's Tavern.
They will follow us because we'll be there from 9 to 11, same location.
Oh, that's where we're going to be?
Yeah, that's where we will be.
We're not at the Benz?
No, we are not at the Benz.
Okay, we're at McCray's Tavern.
We're at
Midtown.
McCray's Tavern.
You know what that means?
What?
Free food.
Possibly a Tito's really early on. But either way, let's head out now on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's a damn good dog, and he knows all about this rivalry and the SEC championship game. Rennie Curran joining us again. Rennie, thanks for the time this morning. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. Let's start with what just happened this past week against Georgia Tech. Being able to knock them off, what does it mean as a dog to kind of shut up the guys from North Avenue?
I mean, it's everything. Coming into this game, you know that you have to run the state. And so in order to do that, you got to beat the in-hometown rival, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. And we were able to do that. We came out, I felt like we started kind of slow, but at the end of the day, we got the job done. Their offense can be pretty challenging to stop at times because of the different misdirections. But we did a great job just in all cylinders, special teams, offense. We really got things going and were able to be effective against them.
Rennie Curran, damn good dog, joining us. Rick and John here. We're live from the Hawks practice facility. It's brand new. It is shiny. It is spectacular. Emory Sports Medicine Center here, North Druid Hills and 85. And Rennie, you know, watching the game on Saturday, I don't even refer to it as a game anymore. That was a scrimmage. That was pathetic. Have you ever seen Georgia Tech less equipped and less sort of ready for battle against the Dogs?
Yeah, not at all. But at the same time, you got to give the Dogs the credit for just their preparation. I know Kirby, just like Coach Rick did, has done a great job just preparing guys way before they actually play them. And so once you have guys assignment ready and knowing what their job is on every single play, it's easy to stop that Georgia Tech offense and make them look really, really silly. And we're able to do that, make them one-dimensional, get them throwing the ball up, getting them behind, and making that clock work against them. Which is tough for their offense because they thrive off misdirection, off big plays. So once you take that out, man, it's tough on them.
Rennie, we've always heard play your assignment against Georgia Tech, and from a fan perspective, it seems easy. All right, your assignment is take the dive back, and that's it, and you just go after Kevontae Benson the entire time. From a player's perspective, how tough is it to not want to freelance and maybe do some things you do against a more conventional offense?
Yeah, it's really, really tough. But at the end of the day, after watching the film going into this game, you know that they're always one play away from busting a big run. And so you have to be disciplined. And like I said before, we did a great job at Georgia when I was there, as well as what they do now is just preparing week to week. You know, every Monday we would take out 30 minutes and go over their offense. And so by the time you got to that Georgia Tech week, it's ingrained. It's second nature. Like, you already know exactly what your job is. And then you got guys like Raquan Smith flying around. So even if you do kind of freelance, you got guys like that to fly around and make up for it.
Snellville's own Rennie Curran joining us here. Damn good dog. Third round pick back in 2010, 97th overall to the Tennessee Titans. Played with the Bucs as well for a minute. First team All-American in 2009. First team All-SEC in 2009. Definitely a big time player. So Rennie, I'm giving everybody the bio, you know, to pump you up because you deserve it, man. But also to lead to this. Who was a better linebacker at UGA, you or Roquan Smith?
Y'all gonna put that on me, man. All I'm gonna say is just listen.
I ask the tough questions around here, Rennie.
Yeah. All I'm gonna say is go back and look at the stats. And at the same time, it's deceiving because this is such a great defense. You know, so for him to be able to do the things he's done on his defense full of playmakers, across the board from the defensive line to, you know, the DBs. I mean, all across the board is a great defense. So to be able to make 100 tackles, I mean, just a great player, great leader. He reminds me a lot of myself. I tell people that all the time. Very humble kid. You know, I talk to him all the time and try to give him advice when I can. And, I mean, he's got such a bright future. So I can't really comment on that. But That was a tough one.
Wow, taking the high road here, John. How about that?
Nothing wrong with that at all. Rennie Curran, our guest here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, Rennie, a couple of weeks ago down at Auburn, Georgia played their worst game of the year. They lose their only game of the year. What do you have to do differently against an offense in Auburn right now that is red hot?
Man, we definitely have to start fast. I mean, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise, we have to go in there and execute. We have to be a machine against this team. And, you know, that's the thing that I did not see the first time we played them. We gave them a lot of plays. We pretty much gave them a lot of points and a lot of opportunities that they got early on. And once you give a team like that confidence and they smell blood, it's going to be hard to stop. And so we have to go in there and really establish some momentum early on in the game and play with swag, play like savages, you know, play good Georgia football early on or else it's going to be a long day.
Why wasn't that the case at Auburn? Was it the home field advantage? What, you know what I'm saying? It's easy to say, and I agree with you that that's what needs to happen on Saturday. Why didn't that happen a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a mixture of things. I think you got a mixture of young guys who were going into a hostile environment for the first time, and then also you can't discredit the home field advantage. That always plays a major part. I feel like if we played in Athens, it may have been completely different. You know, you make a couple big plays, and things get going well, and it's like a train. You know, it's hard to stop that momentum. So I think it's definitely a mixture of things, and we have to really, really just go in there. And then also it has to be a little bit of luck on our side. When you talk about getting to those championship games and games where the talent is pretty much evenly distributed across the lines. I mean, you definitely have to have a little bit of luck, momentum, all those things going your way to ultimately pull out victory. So.
Rennie, it's a little easier to make it into the playoffs now because there's four teams as opposed to two when you played in the old BCS era. Do you like the playoffs better? Do you think they should shorten the regular season maybe by one game to give these kids a little bit more rest throughout the fall?
Man, I definitely like the playoff system. I think it definitely gives you the opportunity to see the better matchups across the board. Do I wish they would shorten up the season? Yeah, I think it's important to protect these guys. You know, these are young kids. They need to protect their bodies at the end of the day. They still have, some of them, a long way to go. But at the same time, it gives you an opportunity as a player, if there's a three-way tie here or if you may have one early loss like we do, chance to kind of redeem yourself. So that's what I kind of like about the playoff system.
Hey, Rennie, got to talk to you about your book. You recently wrote a children's book with your daughter, and I hear you're touring elementary schools. A, how fun was the project? And B, how fun is touring and, you know, reading the book to all the kiddies out there?
Oh, man, it was awesome. And I had, you know, no plans of writing a children's book at all. I know, you know, in the past I've spoken to a lot of businesses, churches, associations, but that one just kind of came as a vision. And I really started to believe that a lot of young kids, especially in elementary school age, just need to hear a positive message of confidence, leadership, positive behavior. And then to also be able to do it with my daughter made it even more special, just being able to show her the ability to lead and to have an influence at a young age and to know that she can create and doesn't just have to be a consumer, That's made it even more special. And just touring has been awesome, man. I've been all over the state, going anywhere from like Dakota, Georgia, to Manchester, to I'm actually going to Snellville, back to Brookwood this Thursday. So it's been awesome. Kids are, you know, amazing. They always have something funny to say. So it's been a blessing, and I love being able to get to do what I do now, just leveraging the brand that I built at University of Georgia, and now being able to provide impact in the community.
Rennie, thanks for all you do in the community. Thanks for coming on with us again. Best of luck on Saturday to your Dogs.
Yes, sir. Go Dogs.
That's Rennie Curran, our guest on the WadeFord.com hotline, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're going to ask the question next as we're live here at the Emory Sports Complex, the Hawks' new training and practice facility. Having a great time hanging out with here. Grant Hill will stop by at 1 o'clock. When we get in it back next, though, it's our college football cheat sheet. Who would you have rather played if you're a Georgia fan? Bama or Auburn? We'll talk about that next with your phone calls at 404-741-0929.
Sports Radio 92.9. On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
And it's the college football cheat sheet bringing you the question of the day, and it's all brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC Tune-Up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. We are here at Emory Sports Medicine Center, home of the Hawks practice facility. Coach Bud and many of the players are behind the door that I'm looking at right now, and those are the shiny courts. Go to either at NBA TV Rick, and you're going to see some of the tweets I sent out, or go to 92.9 The Game on Twitter, and you will see some of the pictures I sent of the practice court. I didn't want, John, I felt like I'd be invading privacy, taking pictures of the locker room and all that kind of stuff. So I just took some pictures of the pristine courts out there. And it's real beautiful. You've got lighting on the top and the reflection on the floor. Mm-hmm. It's almost artistic.
I had the idea to go grab a basketball and launch a three. And I may, once they clear out of practice, I may go out there and jack a three just to see. You know, I got to take the shirt off, take the hoodie off, get loose, maybe stretch a little like Woody Harrelson in White Men Can't Jump, looking like Jane Fonda on the sideline. But, yeah, I may go do that. This place is unbelievable. I love the workout facility in the back. The funny part is when Garen was walking us around, he goes, yeah, they've got the nice indoor turf where you can do sprints. You're talking to us about doing sprints. I can't see any one of the three of us going out there busting out like a 40-yard dash at full sprint.
That's for our guy John Collins to run some of those sprints. Garen, the head of PR for the Atlanta Hawks, and we've been talking with our guys Jason Roos and John Steinberg as well. Major shout-out to them. They do a phenomenal job, and they take great care of us. All right, college football question of the day. If you're a Dog fan, who would you rather be playing this week, Bama or Auburn? Call us right now, 404-741-0929. We're short on time, long on opinions, so we'll get you in here for about a 30-second take again, 404-741-0929. John, I've broken it down like this.
Okay.
Auburn and Alabama side-by-side, QB, running back, wide receiver, O-line, special teams, front seven, and DBs. Mm-hmm. I got a check mark for Bama at O-line and DBs. I got Auburn better at QB, better at running back, better at wide receiver, better at special teams, and better in the front seven. I think if I'm a Dog fan, I want my shot against Alabama, not that team that housed me 40-17 a couple weeks ago.
I agree with you with quarterback. Jared Stidham's playing great. Today's Jared Stidham. Jared Correct. Stidham back in September was not very good. He now looks like a perfect fit for Gus Malzahn's offense. I'll argue with you right now about running backs. Damian Harris, Bo Scarborough, against a banged-up Kerryon Johnson, no Cameron Petway, and who knows who their backup is.
Here's the thing. You're making good points here.
Najee Harris, too.
If I get it, Alabama has a deeper stable of backs than Auburn, but who is the best back? And just healthy. Let's assume Kerryon Johnson and that shoulder is going to play. The best back to – Kerryon Johnson is better than Damian Harris. Kerryon Johnson is better than Bo Scarborough. That's why I say that. And you don't need – Auburn doesn't – run a stable of backs. He's their bell cow guy. He gets every carry. He catches every ball. So do you agree with me that Kerryon is the best of the running backs
individually?
In this game?
Yes.
Individually.
As a group, it's Alabama. And the problem is I can't play if healthy. Kerryon Johnson's not going to be 100% healthy. And we're talking about playing this
week.
But
his legs are going to be 100% healthy.
Yeah, but if his shoulder's jacked up and he can't play in the game, now you've got the little skinny kid that ran and hurt his ankle in the first
Cam
play.
Martin.
Yeah.
They got shots for that, John.
I'd also argue
that
Alabama's wide receivers are better. Now, you don't have a QB to throw on the ball. Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, those dudes are ball players.
Ryan Davis has set an Auburn record for receptions in a season. You've got Slayton, the deep ball guy. He does Moss things. That TD he had against UGA was a Randy Moss type of TD. I believe that Calvin Ridley is the best of the bunch. Mm-hmm. I think the better group of wide receivers is with Auburn.
Close to me. I'll agree with you with front seven, and that has a lot to do with the Alabama injuries, and I would agree
exactly
with you.
Exactly, that's why.
And I'd agree with you on the defensive backs. Minkah Fitzpatrick, they might have three or four first-round picks in the defensive backfield for Alabama.
Minkah Fitzpatrick, he's the best DB in the country, right?
Yeah, you could argue anybody, that. Man? Absolutely.
So that's why I've got a check mark there. So there it is. John and I have broken it down a little bit. I think the better matchup for UGA would be Bama. What do you say?
With the question about Cameron or Kerryon Johnson, I'd say the better matchup is Bama, barely, and that's only because, you know, right now you look at what Auburn. If Auburn's 100% healthy, I don't like that matchup at all for Georgia. We've already seen healthy what that means. I think both of those defensive lines could get after Jake Fromm and slow down the run. I think Auburn presents a better pass rush challenge for Georgia. So Bama would be the better match. I would have rather played Bama if I was Georgia.
Yeah.
Although I think both of those matchups are going to be tough because both teams want to shut down the run. Let's go to the phones, 404-741-0929. Kelly's up first on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Kelly, who would you have rather played if you're Georgia?
I'd rather play Auburn. Gotta go back and beat them real bad for taking care of us the first time.
So, because of that beatdown, are you more, you know, is there more fear with that match? That 40-17, and it really wasn't close in the second half.
Yeah, I'd rather take them down.
He must be gone. Okay. Oh, I see. So it's a revenge factor, kind of like John telling me about the Falcons, that he would rather have, you know, a matchup with the Patriots.
I want the Patriots.
I'm saying I would rather have the Steelers. Give me – who else is good in the AFC this year?
That's it. The end.
Good question.
Jacksonville, maybe.
Good call. But Blake Bortles, yeah. Give me a break. So, yeah, I would rather see somebody. But John wants – he wants another crack at New England. Be careful what you wish for.
Let's go to David on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. David, who would you rather play if you're Georgia or would have rather played, Auburn or Alabama, because you're playing Auburn?
We got to play Auburn. I think Bama's the easier team to beat, but if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, and Auburn's beat both of us. So if we want to prove that we're going to be national champions, you got to beat Auburn. And if you don't win, then you never should have been there to begin with.
I mean, I like it. It's a very confident take right there. That's what I'm hearing from. It's a small sample, but two dog fans are like, yo, Auburn kicked our butt. I want retribution. I want revenge in the dome. And I'm cool with that.
Dude, to be the best, you got to beat the best. Ric Flair said it for 40 years as a professional wrestler. To be the man, you got to beat the man. I love that Miami's playing Clemson. Guess what? If we're not worthy of beating them, we're not going to win in the championship anyway. You're going to have to go through Clemson. And for Georgia, you got to go through Auburn, who right now is the best team. Let's go to Chris on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Auburn or Alabama, Chris, who would you have rather played?
Okay, before I get my answer, let me say, what's up, Rick and John? What's up, hey, boys?
Yo. What's up?
Hey, man, last time I talked to y'all, was heading to Houston for the Super Bowl. I know we'll go back, rise up. My answer on that would be, I'd rather face Auburn Tigers. For one thing, we know that Stedham is a good quarterback, but we know Jalen Hurts has more experience when it comes to big games. So I know that if we face Alabama, I believe that they would be more of a takedown against us, because we know that we can have more pressure on Stedham than we have Jalen Hurts. He's more of a dual threat quarterback. You get what I'm saying?
I think he's – thank you for the call. I think we're giving Jalen Hurts way too much credit calling him a dual threat quarterback. That's implying that he's really good throwing the football, which, of course, he's not. I would rather have a Jarrett Stidham, who's a terrific pocket passer, with the ability to get a little bit busy with his feet. Not unlike a Jake Fromm, where he doesn't get dual threat credit,
sure,
but he can make plays
with
his feet. And, you know, like Malik Rozier, would you consider him a dual threat quarterback?
No.
He's a pocket passer with feet.
Yeah.
So that's my personal choice in terms of need to be perfectly balanced. But
one thing we did not factor into this, Gus Malzahn versus Nick Saban. Who do you trust in a big game more? I'd take Nick Saban 999 out of 1,000 times over Gus Malzahn.
I would have agreed with you, and I basically do agree with you, but Gus Malzahn outcoached Nick Saban last week.
He did.
He did. And I'm just saying, like, Saban's a better, way better coach, but Malzahn got him last week.
Take a break. We'll come back. When we get back from the break, let's dive into the Atlanta Falcons. I want to ask a question. Do you guys buy that this 3-game winning streak is proof that they've turned a corner, or is it a little bit of fool's gold? Let's dissect that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.
And I got a limousine sitting out there a mile long. with 25 women just dying for me to go, woo, because I'm the world champion, sucker.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.